of a story about running away from home. I don't know about you guys. Nowadays, it's less common because everybody carries a GPS tracker with them wherever they go, right? It's less common because you don't see as many kids running around outside. But back in my day, I can say that now because I'm old. Back in my day, everybody had a story about running away from home. I remember one time I was getting pretty frustrated because my mom wasn't laying down the law on my sister. My sister was bothering me. She was really getting on my nerves, and I wanted my mom to take care of it. My mom chose not to. She chose the path of peace when I wanted justice. And because of that, I got mad, and I was getting so mad that I decided that I was going to run away. So I grabbed a pillowcase, and I threw the essentials in there. I made sure that I had a couple of transformers, and I made sure that I had, I don't even know if I thought about food or clothes or anything like that, but just a couple of things, stuffed them in a pillowcase, and marched out the door, down the street to a house that we called the witch's house. And it really, it just was a house that had a whole bunch of trees in the front yard that you could climb. And one time my sister saw her walking out of her house with a cloak on. And so after that, it was the witch's house, of course. So I run away. I go down there and I hide in the trees. And that was my life. That's where I was going to live from now on. Just me and my transformers and my pillowcase. And I was going to live in these trees. And that was going to be it. And I waited and I waited and I waited until I was sure that it had cut my mom to the heart. Right, I knew that she was probably frantically searching for me. I didn't have a cell phone at the time. We didn't have cell phones. There was no GPS, and so she was desperately searching for me. I was convinced of it. I waited. It must have been at least 5 minutes, and I was like ready. I just knew that when I emerged from these trees, there was going to be cops. There was going to be sirens. There was going to be search dogs. There was going to be all of these things. And so I'm feeling, you know, pretty proud of myself that I've really got my mom this time. And she learned what it was like to live without me, and she didn't like it. I knew it in my head. So I march home, and of course, she had no idea that I was gone, right? And so my plan was all for naught. And that's a funny story, and I'm sure that most of us in here have a story like that where we just got frustrated, we got fed up, and we decided that we were going to run away. But there are some horrible, tragic stories in here as well, and I know that there are people in here that have actually run away, that have actually just decided enough is enough. I'm going to leave. And for you, it wasn't just hiding in the trees and waiting for the police sirens. You really did it. And you were convinced that life was going to be better, and so you started running from home. And somewhere along the line, you discovered just how wrong you were. Today, I'm not talking about childhood runaway moments. Instead, I'm talking about the people who make the decision to run away from their spiritual home, from God, from their faith, and from everything familiar. Jesus used this teaching device called parables. It was a story that was intended to prove a point, and he would use these as a way to help share with people what God was like. And if you have your Bibles in here, go ahead and turn over to Luke chapter 15, because I want to share with you guys one of those stories today. We're actually going to walk through it over the course of 4 weeks, and so like I said, I want to encourage you guys to come back. I'm only asking you to make a commitment for the next 4 weeks, but I think that if you do, you're going to start to uncover some truths about God and about yourself that are going to be transformative in your life. One of the most famous stories that Jesus tells is there's this chapter, Luke 15, where Jesus actually tells three stories in a row about missing things. The first story is about a shepherd who has 100 sheep, and one of them leaves. One of them runs away, and the shepherd leaves the 99. He goes and chases after the one. The next one is about a widow who has a coin, and she loses that coin, and so she tears up her entire house in order to find that coin. And when she does, then she calls her neighbors together, and they celebrate with her. And then this one is a story about a son who runs away from home. And so we're going to pick things up here in Luke chapter 15, starting in verse 11, and I'm gonna go back and forth through this story. So, we'll have the verses on the screen behind me as well. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them." Now, in just like nowadays, back then, when the father died, everything that he owned was divided amongst his sons. Usually the firstborn got a double portion, got a little bit extra, but all of the kids, all of the sons got something, and the son goes up to his father, and we're going to, just for the ease of everything, I'm gonna call the son Scott. Do we have any Scots in here this morning? Okay, all right. So no Scots in here. Okay, I'm going to call the son Scott. So that's what's written in my notes. So it was going to get really confusing if somebody raised their hand and said that they were also a Scott, but I would have changed for you. I want you to know that. The younger son, Scott, was impatient. He wanted his money now, and so he walked up to his father, and I can just imagine this conversation. He says, "Hey, Dad, you know that money that you're supposed to give me when you die? I wish you were dead, because I'd like the money right now." And so he talks to his daddy, and in this culture, this would have been one of the ultimate insults that you could give somebody. And I mean, just even imagine that conversation now. One of your kids comes up to you and says, "Hey, I know you've been planning for retirement. You're planning on living for a long time, but I can't wait, and I need the money right now. So I want you just to liquidate your 401k. I want you to take the part of the money that was supposed to be given to me, when you pass away, and I want you to give it to me now." Now, back then, they didn't have 401ks, they didn't have retirement plans, so this probably meant selling sheep, this probably meant selling assets that he owned in order to liquidate enough to be able to give his son a third of everything he owned. But the father, being gracious, decided to do it. The father couldn't force his son to stay or to do what was right, so he divided the money and gave each of his sons their share. And Scott got what he wanted in this. He got it. He got the money. Verse 13. "Not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had, all of the money, all of the stuff that he had collected, and he set off for a distant country." He runs away. He leaves home. And this is more than just going to see the world. This isn't just he decided that he was going to go on vacation because he had a little extra money now. Scott abandoned the way of living, the way that he had been taught to think, to act, and to believe. Everything that he knew, everything that his father stood for, he took the benefits and he ran with it. Remember that the father in this story represents God, and that the sons in this story represent us. I've been a pastor for 20 years, and in that time, I've seen a lot of people make the same decision. They were coming for a while. They loved God. They were connected to the church. They were getting involved. They were serving, and then something happened that they decided they wanted more than God. I'm not sure that I know every reason that people run from God, but I want to list some off, and I want to know if these resonate with you. Some people run from God because his boundaries feel like punishment. They feel like restrictions. I can't do what I want to do because of God. I don't want limits or rules. I want to be able to do what I want to do. Some people run because they want to prove that they don't need anybody or anything. And so it's like, I don't want this crutch. I don't want something to lean on. Instead, I'm independent. I know myself, and I'm going to run away so that I can prove that I am self-sufficient. They want to do things their way. Others run because disappointment towards people causes them to be angry at God. Disappointment with people leads to anger towards God. And they have this deep or profound hurt with somebody in the church, and they start to associate that with God and who he is. Listen to these stories. "When I was 16, my home church went through a church split. I was so disillusioned by the words and actions of the people that I used it as an excuse to run from God. Another one, some serious stuff came up in life, one of which was when my uncle, who was the biggest Christian that I knew, failed miserably. That, combined with a couple of other events, made me decide that God wasn't worth following. One more, I basically put the blame on God because I was hurt. I wasn't necessarily intentional, but it was like it just slowly happened and I became bitter. And we see this often. I've seen it over and over again as I've been pastoring people that have come and gone because of these things. A couple others. Some people run because of poor relationship choices. One person said, "I ran from God for over 3 years, and it was the darkest time of my life. I started my senior year of high school and continued through my early college years. I fell victim to peer pressure and wanting to fit in. I did things because everybody was doing them or because I thought it made me look cool. I convinced myself that my life was carefree and perfect when I was really depressed, spiraling out of control, and using whatever I could to self-medicate my pain. I was in denial, and I was in a toxic relationship that only fueled me to do more wrong." See, others run, some run because of relationships that they get tangled up in. Others run because it's easier to run than to face the results of failure. They think that they've messed up too many times, and so God couldn't possibly have them back. But a lot of times, that's projected on the church as well. The church couldn't possibly forgive me because I've gone through all of these things. And some people run because of an addiction. Something takes control of their life. They're no longer in control, and they don't want to feel that guilt and shame every time they come to church, so they back away, they run away. Regardless of the reason, there's little that's as sad, especially for somebody in my position, as watching somebody run. Because you know where it's headed. And you can predict the result, especially when you've been doing it for a while. If you've been in church for a while, you've seen people leave, and you know what the end result is going to be. Let's see what happens when you run. Luke chapter 15, verse 13 says, "Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living." The first consequence of running, then, is that you leave home. Which seems obvious. If you're running away from home, you're leaving home. But there are some very important things that you leave as you leave home. The first one is when you leave home, you leave the safety of home. When you leave home, you leave the safety of home. It's not that God chooses to quit protecting you, but instead it's because you refuse his protection. You walk out from under his protection. When you run, you leave the safety of home and the protection of your Heavenly Father. Number two, when you leave home, you leave the security of home. Now, safety and security sound like the same word, but security is this feeling of knowing that you belong. It's this feeling of knowing that you have somewhere to come back to, and now that is taken away from you. Security is that feeling of identity, knowing that I am part of something that's bigger than me. You leave that security of home. It's like when you come home from vacation and you know that you get to sleep in your own bed that night. There's just a safety and there's a security there, knowing that I'm in the place where I belong. So you leave the safety of home, you leave the security of home. And then number three, you leave the blessing of home. There are blessings that come for my kids with living in the Graham household. I pay for their food, and they eat a lot of it, right? One time, my oldest son ate 18 eggs in one sitting. You can just imagine what that would have been in today's economy. Thankfully, this was a couple years ago. But 18 eggs in one sitting. I pay for their water, their electricity, their clothes, their gas, a roof over their head. I let them watch my TV in my living room while they lay on my couch and they breathe my air. Right? All of this comes together. There are blessings for my kids with living in the Graham household that they had nothing to do with. They just get to enjoy these things because they are part of my house. And if they were to leave, those blessings don't go with them. If they were to leave home, they don't get to take that blessing with them. I don't continue to pay for their Wi-Fi just because they leave home. And yet, this is a blessing that they enjoy as long as they are part of the home. Now, my love for them wouldn't change. My desire to bless them would not change. My grief, the distance that I feel would change, but my love, my care, my concern would not change. And it's the same way with God. When you run from God, you run away from his blessings. He wants to bless you. He wants to take care of you. He wants to protect you. But he can't. And he won't. Because you choose to lose the blessings when you run. And then finally, when you leave home, you run from the love of home. Now, this doesn't mean that God doesn't still love you, just in the same way that I still love my kids, but you're not there to experience it. You don't get to see it anymore. And so there's this disconnect that you feel. I think about people that when I was in youth group, there were people that came, they loved God, they were passionate about God. For the first time in their life, for a lot of them, they experienced unconditional love and acceptance. And then later, for one reason or another, they left church and they turned their back on God. Now they're far from home, they're far from that love, but we still love them, and so does God. But they aren't here. We don't get to see them anymore, so they don't get to experience that love any longer. When you leave home, you leave so much. You live without the safety, the security, the blessings, and the love of home. And who wants to live that way? But if that's not enough, when you keep running, the consequences continue. See if you can recognize this pattern as we continue the story of the prodigal son. It says, not long after that, the younger son got together all he had. He set off for a distant country, and there he squandered his wealth in wild living. Remember, the money that he got from his dad, now he has squandered it going out partying and trying to impress his friends. Scott's dad worked all his life for that money, and Scott squandered it with wild living. He wasn't trying to do good with the money, just trying to do what was good for him. He ran away to party, and he lost everything in the process. And it's easy to look at Scott and say, that wasn't a very smart decision. And truth is, it wasn't smart, but it was predictable. And if you've lived any amount of time in life, you've watched people do this in their lives, where they start to go down a road, they start to make some decisions, and you're like, I can see where this is headed. And if you don't change course, if you don't change path, you're going to end up in a place that you don't want to be. Because nobody intends to make a mess of their life. Nobody decides one day. There used to be the anti-drug abuse commercials that were like, you know, nobody wants to be a drug addict, or nobody decides to be a drug addict. And that's true, right? Nobody wants to ruin their life. Nobody sets out, no kid when they're growing up is like, you know, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, I want to be homeless and alone, and I want to be, you know, I want to be hooked on drugs. And, you know, nobody says that. Nobody sets out to do that, and yet so many people end up there. So many people, and it's a series of decisions that they make that lead them to that point. And they finally, when they finally come back, and we've had lots of these stories in our church, when they finally come back, some of the questions that they ask are, what made me do that? How did I ever make that decision? Why did I ever get married to that person? Why did I spend so much money on that? Why? What made me do this? Let's continue. Luke 14. After he had spent everything. So Scott lost all the money. But again, this is part of this pattern that we see, that when you run from God, you end up losing. When you run from God, you lose. And we've seen these stories over and over again. Some lose money, some lose their family, some lose marriages, some lose their job or their career, some lose businesses, some lose friends, some lose their innocence, some lose their reputation. Over and over and over again, we see these stories of how much people lost. In Scott's case, it was all of his dad's hard work building up an inheritance for his son, and Scott goes and he blows all of it. For you, it might be something different, but there is a loss associated with running away. And it's painful to watch, because as a pastor and as somebody that genuinely wants what's best for you, my heart breaks for those that are running away and for what their decisions have cost them. Verse 14, after he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. Now, this famine would have come whether he had all of the money still or not. The famine was coming either way, but because he had made these bad decisions, he found himself in a dire circumstance. There's a very good chance that the famine also reached the father's household. And yet the father was able to weather the storm because of the good decisions that he had made. And when you run from God, your plans tend to fall apart. You can't see the famine that's on the horizon. You can't see the thing that's going to mess up and upset everything that you have planned. And yet, it happens just the same. It's kind of like when we used to have to use paper maps to get somewhere. And one time, my wife and I, we were living down in Grays Harbor County in a little town called Oakville. And we were looking at the map, and we were like, well, we want to go to Aberdeen, which is out by the coast. And we're looking at the map, and we see this road that looks an awful lot like a shortcut. And we knew the highway went, you know, kind of up and around. But if we could just take this road, then we would be in, you know, we'd save so much time. So we loaded up the kids in the van, and we decided to head out on this road. And very quickly, we realized why it wasn't the highway. Because as we're driving up this road, it changes from pavement to gravel. And then it changes from two lanes to one lane. And then those lanes get filled with potholes. And pretty soon, my minivan is trying to off-road. And then we're on the side of a mountain, and there's not much space on either side of the van, and we're looking out the window, and I'm telling the kids, hey, everybody get on the left side of the van, because we don't want this thing to accidentally roll over to the right. And so we're looking down, and we finally made it, but that 45-minute drive that would have taken if we had taken the highway took over 2 hours trying to take the shortcut. And it's so true for us. You see a map, and so you get this picture. It's this idea of what things might look like. But when you get down into the details, when you get to the actual journey, you find so many things that change and upset the status. And so Scott thought that he could go, that he would you know, enjoy his time partying. He would make a bunch of friends, build a bunch of relationships, and everything would just be great. He spent all of his money, and then the famine came. And all of these things that he thought were going to go well fell apart right away. Everyone thinks that they're the exception. They think that they've got it all planned out. They think that they can continue to do it. I'm just going to take a little hit of this, a little smoke of that. I'm just going to, you know, I can take one drink, I can eat one Lay's potato chip, nobody else can, but I have the willpower to just eat one, right? Everybody thinks that they're the exception, but I bet if I was to pass the microphone around right now, I would have a lot of people that would say, I thought that was the exception, and then something happened, and then there was an unexpected thing, and things didn't go according to my plan. And the truth is, when you run from God, it's inevitable. Your plans will fail. Your relationship plans, your financial plans, your future plans all fail. One day, you're going to look around, you're going to say, I didn't mean to get her pregnant. I didn't count on being broke. I never thought I'd be chasing the next high. Being lonely wasn't part of the plan. And you're going to look around and you're going to say, all of a sudden, there's a famine in the land, and I don't know what to do. I don't know how to respond. We want to blame God, but God didn't do this to us. It's because we ran away from home. We ran away from His protection. We ran away from the safety, the security, the blessing, and the love of home. And when we did that, then we walked away from what God wanted for us. And so what I want you to see today is that there is a connection between what is happening in your life and what you have decided about God. Let me say that one more time. There is a connection between what is happening in your life and what you have decided about God. You see, Scott was going to be rich and free. He was going to have fun with his dad's money, but all of his plans failed. Verse 15. So he went and he hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. Far from the comfort, security, and blessings of home, Scott got a job in a pig pen. And how embarrassing this must have been for him. Just a few days earlier, he was living high on life. He's, you know, he's buying rounds for everybody. He's got all of these friends. Now, broke, alone, in the mud, staring at the pigs, and now he's got this job that has him humiliated, broken. According to Jewish law, this made him not only physically dirty, but spiritually dirty as well. And so when you run, then you end up embarrassed and ashamed because you knew better. You knew what was right, and you chose the wrong thing, and now there's this shame that comes over you. And we see here, and we're going to see in just a second, that Scott is alone in this scenario. He's alone, and yet there's probably a part of him that likes it that way, because he doesn't want his friends to see how he ended up. He doesn't want his friends to know what he's going through now, and he would rather isolate than to tell people what he was going through. Shame is often the biggest hurdle then for the runaway, because they say, I'd love to come home, but I don't know what people will think. I don't want people to judge me. I don't want people to question me. Whatever you're going through, it may have been a series of bad decisions. It may have been a series of unfortunate events. But don't let guilt and shame keep you away. Don't let guilt and shame keep you away. You can't run forever, so come home. Today is your opportunity. You might ask, what will people think? And the people in here that I know, that I've spent 3.5 years with, that are genuine followers of Jesus, they're going to be so excited. They're going to be so happy for you when you come home. Their hearts are going to leap, knowing they're excited just to have you here today. Hopefully you felt that when you were out in the lobby and you got welcomed by so many people, and there were so many people that stopped and talked to you because they love you and they want you to come home. They've been praying for you, believing for you that God would bring you home. So forget about the critics. Forget about the cynics that might question your commitment. Today is your day. We want to invite you to come home. Verse 16, he longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but nobody gave him anything. Because now we see here that Scott is poor, desperate, ashamed, and isolated. He ended up alone. Then verse 17, when he came to his senses. When he came to his senses. In this case, what brought Scott to his senses was the consequences of what he was going through. It was this immediate snap back to reality. He's looking around at the pig pen. He's looking at the food that the pigs are eating. He's desiring. He wants to fill his belly with the things that the pigs are eating. And he has this moment of clarity. And he has this moment of understanding that says, I can't live this way anymore. Something is different. Something is wrong. What's it going to take for you to come to your senses? How many broken relationships? How many plans? How many times do you have to lose? How many plans have to fail? The truth is, you don't have to get to the end of your rope before you can take a step towards God. Maybe you're still in a situation where things are pretty good for you right now. This is a great time to come back before you have to get in this situation like Scott is, where you have to lose everything. Today is a good day to come home. Verse 17, when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I'm going to set out and go back to my father, and I'm going to say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. So he got up and he went to his father. And that's the message of the story today. That no matter how far you've gone, how far you've run, no matter what pig pen you find yourself in, you can always come home. Doesn't matter the bad decisions. It doesn't matter the consequences that you're facing. You can come home today. Like I said before, today is part one of a 4-part series where we're going to be breaking down this story to see the truth that God has in it for us. And this is where we're going to stop for today, because I want to invite you, for those of you that are examining your life, you're examining the consequences, you're seeing the things that you're going through, and you're saying, I think it's time. I think I need to come home. Next week, we're going to look at the turning point in the story, and we're going to talk about the incredible moment that follows this decision. But for now, I want us to think about this moment when shame and anxiety reached their fever pitch. As the youngest son, as Scott crested the hill, and now he can see his father's house in the distance. We don't know how long the journey was for him to get back to that point. We don't know how many times he rehearsed that speech that we just read. We don't know how many times he thought to himself, what's going to happen if my father says, I'm sorry, you left. You took your money, you ran away, now I need you to get out. We don't know how many times he wondered what the older brother was going to think of him. We don't know how many times he replayed this conversation in his head, but now he gets to the edge of the hill. And he knows that as he walks up, that the family home is going to be in view. And he's standing there, and there's all of this anxiety, there's all of this fear. His heart is pounding, his palms are sweating, he's nervous, he's anxious, he doesn't know what's going to happen. He's afraid of what's next. He's ashamed that about the way that he's been living. What is the father going to do? What is the father going to do? How is the father going to respond in this moment? For those of you guys that have been in church, you know what happens next. Bible says, verse 20, while he was still a long way off, as he's coming up over that hill, his father saw him, was filled with compassion for him, ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. And that's what God is going to do. If you find yourself in this situation this morning, where you're ready to come home, this is how God is going to respond, and this is how the church is going to respond to you as well. Because we're so excited. We want to be here with you. We want to walk alongside of you. Our arms are open wide. God's arms are open wide for you to come home. No lectures, no questions, just welcome home. It's time to quit running. It's time to come home. Just for a second, I want to shift gears. I want to talk to you about another story of running, but this isn't a story of somebody running away. This is a story of somebody running to. Because Easter is the story of a father running to his children. And we see this in the life of Jesus. It's the story about Jesus who willingly left the safety, the security, and the blessing of his home in heaven and came to earth. The Bible says that he was born, he lived a sinless life, and then ultimately he gave his life in ministry to others. He lived for others. Ultimately, he died for others. And then we get to Easter morning because the death wasn't the end. Romans crucified a lot of people. There were a lot of graves. There were a lot of people that stood up and said that they were the Messiah. There were a lot of people that made that claim. It wasn't the crucifixion that changed history. It wasn't the fact that Jesus lived that changed history. It was his death and then his resurrection that became the turning point for humanity. Because now, all of a sudden, death itself was defeated. Now we've started to realize that death isn't the end of life. It's just a transition into something else. Now we start to see that there can be more than we previously thought or imagined. Death is not the end of the story. Instead, on the third day, the Bible tells us that Jesus rose from the grave, that he conquered sin and death, that he proved once and for all that no distance is too great for the Father to come running to his children. And if you're in here today and you want to come home, all you have to do is take that first step, and the Father closes the gap and he runs towards you and he's ready for you. He's got his arms open wide. He's ready. So Easter then is your invitation to stop running. Easter is your invitation to come home. Jesus' resurrection is your assurance that you don't have to stay in the pig pen of life. You don't have to live with regret or shame. You can come home to a God who loves you, and he's running towards you with arms wide open today. And you can come to a church family that is ready to do the same. So if you don't hear anything else this Easter, I want you to hear this, and I want you to think about it as you leave. No matter how far you've gone, no matter how many mistakes you've made, Jesus made a way for you. The cross and the resurrection are his message of love. It's time to come home. Father, we thank you for what you're doing and what you're speaking here today. And God, we thank you that your invitation is that your arms are open wide. God, that it doesn't matter. That all of the other things, all of the sin, all of the consequences, we can deal with that later. The most important thing is that people come home. And that, God, you want them to take a step towards you today. And so, Father, I just ask for those that right now have been running, those that have been far from you, those that realize the consequences of their decisions. Maybe they're in the pig pen, maybe they're still on their way to the pig pen, but they can see where that path is headed. God, I pray that they would make that decision right now to turn around and to come home. As Christians across this place continue to pray, I just want to encourage you today that now is your opportunity. Today is your day to come home. In just a